dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the most important battlefronts in that war, increasingly, obviously, is Communist China. And today we have a very special program devoted to, well, reflecting on what it means that 70 years ago today, this brutally repressive Chinese Communist Party seized control of the people of China and began the People's Republic of China at their great expense and increasingly that of much of the rest of the world. A man who has studied this closely, written extensively and extremely thoughtfully about it, is our first guest. He is Dr. Bradley Thayer. He is a professor of political science at the University of Texas in San Antonio. He has a number of other academic affiliations and credentials. We won't have a chance to do justice to them in the shortness of this time, but I did want to plug his newest book, How China Sees the World, Han Centrism and the Balance of Power in International Politics, and also a very important article that he wrote just today in the Hill newspaper with his frequent writing partner and another member of the Committee on the Present Danger China, Lianqiao Han, entitled Celebrating Tyranny, The People's Republic of China Turns 70. Dr. Thayer, it's good to have you back, sir. Welcome. So glad to have you.
Frank, thank you very much for the opportunity. A pleasure to be with you.
So, in the briefest of brief forms, give us a sense of what the past 70 years have represented under the misrule of the Chinese Communist Party in the People's Republic.
Well, we argue that it has been an unmitigated disaster. No matter how you want to look at what has happened in China in the last 70 years since the Communist Party of China came to power, it has been completely deleterious to China. First, if you simply look at their leadership, Communist China's leaders have been appalling. From Mao Zedong, who was a mass murderer who starved tens of millions of people and nearly destroyed his country through his brutal policies, to Deng Xiaoping, who suppressed student protesters, pro-democracy protesters in Tiananmen, and later maneuvered China into the Western economic ecosystem, to our chagrin, of course, today, but at the time with the encouragement and support of Western political and business leaders, to Xi Jinping, who considers the leader today, who considers himself to be the equal of Mao, which is very alarming. If we also consider that the PRC is belligerent, immediately, almost immediately from its founding, attacked Tibet and conquered it, also waged war against the United Nations in North Korea and fought it to a stalemate by 1953, obviously, when the armistice was reached. The PRC has attacked India. It attacked South Vietnam. It's clashed with many of its neighbors in its history. It continually attempts to coerce Taiwan, as it has done since the end of the Civil War in 1949. The regime has gross and sustained abuse of its people, in turn, the starvations, which I've mentioned. But we see today the horrors of the human rights abuses committed by the Communist Party of China, from organ harvesting of prisoners to forced sterilizations of women, persecution of Muslims and other religious minorities, ecological mass destruction that adversely affects the world's future.
This is pretty grim. The apologists for China, and of course the regime itself, points to the extraordinary success they claim for Chinese communism in lifting out of poverty hundreds of millions of Chinese and creating a degree of prosperity that, to some at least, is said to offset the rather negative history that you've just recounted. What are your thoughts on that claim right there?
My thoughts are this, that the Chinese didn't do that. The West did that. The West is responsible for lifting those people out of poverty, as well as many countless millions more around the world. It was the West's decision to bring China in to its economic system, as well as other countries around the world, that's responsible for lifting those individuals out of poverty.
So the communist system as it was practiced, or the sort of more fascistic system that sort of has supplanted it in some measure, is not responsible, in fact, for that miraculous transformation of the lots of life of lots of Chinese?
Indeed, it's not. They couldn't have done it without the West. The West made it possible and worked with the Chinese to bring that about, as the West has worked with many countries around the world to bring, again, many hundreds of millions of people out of poverty due to the economic system that the West created in the wake of World War II and expanded in the wake of the Cold War. So that is a talking point, definitely. The CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, touts that time and again, really ad nauseum. But it's a falsehood. It's a major lie.
And the truth of the matter is, I guess one would say, as a sort of corollary to your very important point, we not only enabled that uplifting to take place, but we propped up the Chinese Communist Party successively over the years, and arguably we're doing it now, among other things, with the investments that we're making in Chinese companies through our pension funds. We'll be talking more about that at the end of the show with Kevin Freeman. But how important has the West's sort of safety net been to the fact that we're now witnessing 70 years of this Communist Party's misrule?
It has been very significant. In essence, it has been sine qua non. It has been the absolute essential element which has allowed China to grow at its prodigious rate. And so it is the responsibility, really, of the West to recognize that its policies of engagement, which it's practiced really the last three, four decades of trying to engage China and to interact with it economically, support it economically, and thus politically, because, again, the CCP's legitimacy is that we've made you rich, China. You can only say, as a counterfactual, you could think about if the PRC were not there, how wealthy China would be, how prosperous China would be.
And how safer, much safer the world would be as a result. You know, it's interesting, Bradley Thayer, you're a serious student of these matters. One of our colleagues, Diana West, has written a terrific book called American Betrayal, in which, among other things, she talks about the degree to which the United States actually intervened to help the Chinese communists back during the Civil War by denying the Kuomintang, the pro-Western government of China, the wherewithal to defeat the Chinese communists. So it predates, you know, their creation of this horrific police state, the People's Republic. Brad, we are hard out of time, I'm afraid. I'm so appreciative of your insights and the work that you've done. And thank you for your time on this occasion. Let's get together again in the very near future, if we may. Next up, Claudia Rosette joins us from Hong Kong with a firsthand report of the war zones that we're now witnessing there in the streets of the city. That and more, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and I couldn't be more pleased to say we are joined by one of the most courageous as well as most intrepid and accomplished investigative reporters of our time. She is Claudia Rosette. She writes these days at PJ Media, a tremendously valuable column called The Rosette Report. She also is a very, very highly regarded editorialist and reporter for many, many years at The Wall Street Journal. She is also these days at the Independent Women's Forum, where she is a distinguished senior fellow, and she is a dear friend and an incredibly valuable resource at this very moment where she is reporting for us from Hong Kong. Claudia, it is so good to have you back, and I'm so grateful to you for taking a few minutes out of what I know is an extraordinarily busy moment in your reporting from the ground there in Hong Kong. Give us a sense of what you're seeing around you on this 70th anniversary of the founding of the Chinese Communist Party's People's Republic of China.
In the great city of Hong Kong, there are places that look like a war zone right now, because if you want to see the truth about China's system, Hong Kong is the place where you can see it, not up in Beijing where they're busy with parading bombs and having circuses today. The protests that have been going on here for more than 17 weeks and some beyond that at this point have run into this complete blank refusal by the government here, which is basically a stooge of the government in Beijing, to concede anything apart from finally agreeing to withdraw this extradition bill that never should have been introduced in the first place. But the basic demand here, Frank, is that they want to choose their own leaders, because what Beijing did was first it took away that promise, it broke its treaty promise, and then it saddled them with someone who is not only a stooge of Beijing, but somebody who seems just completely oblivious to what's going on in the city. She was, Carrie Lam, the chief executive, was up in Beijing for the celebrations today of the 70th anniversary of the Communist Party. People here applied to have a protest march, as they do every year on China's National Day. They don't like being taken over by a tyranny. They were denied permission. Increasingly, they've been told they may not even assemble, a right that they were supposed to be guaranteed for 50 years, a right we should all be guaranteed indefinitely. They were told, no, you may not assemble. And there have been huge threats made against Hong Kong by China at this point, that if they don't knuckle under and just shut up and get back to work, those who play with fire will perish by fire. They're staring into the abyss. The PLA could be brought in, the People's Liberation Army. They've had the People's Armed Police exercising. There was a very well-reported piece on Reuters just a day or so ago in which the conclusion was that the Chinese army has probably doubled its troop strength in Hong Kong without telling anybody, quietly, since these protests began. And in the face of all this and really extreme police brutality, it's reached the point where this evening a young man, reportedly a teenager, was shot pretty much point blank in the chest with live ammunition, with a real bullet, by a policeman in the New Territories. So it's escalated to that point today.
Well, I want to talk about what they're doing despite all of this, but just to drill down for a moment on that, this is a threshold, of course, that has not been passed to date, despite the, as you say, 17 weeks of demonstrations, some involving violence. It appears in at least some of the cases at the hands of provocateurs, but some, you know, at the hands of the protesters who are simply increasingly furious over the disdain with which they're being treated. Claudia, how is that being regarded on the ground by the protesters and the people of Hong Kong, that this threshold in violence has now been breached?
Well, it's hard to say what the precise reaction is to that. You'll find it online. They're horrified. But on the street right now, transportation was shut down in the city during the day. It began with shutdowns of the sort of major subway stations near the police stations. The ones that were working, I went into one, you know, much used in a major in central Hong Kong, sort of just near the central business district, and it was filled with riot police waiting for the action. Then one by one, they just kept shutting down these stations.
So these are the authorities that are shutting down the transportation system, not the demonstrator.
Yes, it's the reason the protesters have been calling the MTR, I think it's Metropolitan Transit or something, they started calling it the Communist Railway, because it shuts down stations to try and please sort of suit the police. And it became difficult to get anywhere. And the people have been sort of milling around. They came out and marched anyway, okay? And despite all the threats, that's how angry they are. That's how much they really want the demands they're making, these five demands, including they still want the bill withdrawn. It can't be actually technically withdrawn until the Legislative Council is reconvened, which the chief executive has not yet done. So it's even that is still there. But they want basically sensible things. There's been nothing. And they came out and marched again. And then they're left with no response. What happens then is, okay, what do they do? That's where what they've basically been doing is they attack these sites and symbols of authority. So China's propaganda casts this as sort of random vandalism, rioters, violence, as if they were just sort of running around. They're not actually looting. This is a city full of treasures in the shops. They are not going after that at all. What they're doing is they're spray painting across in front of the Bank of China. Human dignity is what really matters. Liberty is the only real currency. Give me their, you know, democracy or death. They're writing slogans like that. They spray painted them all over the city today.
And Claudia, as you've reported so powerfully from the scene now for the past few months, there is this spirit on the part of the people of Hong Kong that has been captured, as you wrote most recently last night, I believe, in this anthem, Glory to Hong Kong. Talk about how that captures as well as it evokes the spirit of the people that you're with in Hong Kong at the moment.
Yeah, everybody, anyone who's listening, look this up online on YouTube. Glory to Hong Kong. There are many versions at this point. But it was written by someone who's anonymous, in part because that's for the same reason that the protesters wear face masks. Well, they also wear gas masks because there's been so much tear gas. I mean, you don't need to walk into the middle of a protest to have your face digging in the city from tear gas tonight. It's everywhere in the... It's not everywhere. It's anywhere near where they had these pitched battles a bit earlier in the day. And but an anonymous composer, they crowdsourced the lyrics, and they came up with this incredibly moving, solemn, but uplifting anthem, Glory to Hong Kong. It's about how they want freedom, how they're willing to struggle for it. And they've been singing and singing it. But this is this amazing culture that's been produced here, this amazing people who really value freedom and they really understand it. When you talk to them, I mean, I've talked to people from age 13 up until people in their 80s. They get it. They really value it. And that's what they've been singing about, protesting for, writing on the walls, shouting from the windows. And from the communist government, they've had nothing except the sort of escalating use of force to try to stop them. What generally happens with these protests is they're peaceful till the police turn up.
Mm-hmm. And Claudia, I mean, what you've said here is so important. This is an expression on the part of people who have had a taste of freedom and who are clearly facing the prospect of losing it probably forever. I am among those, I must say, who have assumed that once this celebration of the 70th anniversary of the founding of the PRC was passed, that you'd see a lot more of the kind of brutality that has been evident today, including with live rounds. Is that your expectation as well, and that of the people on the streets?
Yeah. I mean, everyone's guessing. We don't know exactly what calculus China is making, but that's very much the high probability. The chief executive who was in Beijing is coming back through Shenzhen, which is where the people's own police have been drilling, which is where, you know, all the sort of conferencing on riot control goes on. And that's not a good sign. Actually, if you look at the whole way this place is being run by China at this point, they have this going on and their handpicked, Xi Jinping's handpicked chief executive decamps for the day to go to Beijing to celebrate the glorious 70 years of the Communist Party.
Claudia, let me ask you about one other thing. Speaking of Beijing, there are reports that the Chinese government has basically locked down Beijing as well, lest there be evidently any kind of disturbances that would mar this spectacle that Xi Jinping has put on. Does that surprise you, or is that really just the latest indication that the government of China doesn't trust its own people.
Of course it doesn't trust its own people. I mean, you have to do that. They it's exactly the crushing, grinding, dehumanizing, you know, get in line and do what you're told that Hong Kong is protesting. That it's the reason they had the Tiananmen uprising 30 years ago. And, you know, people in China are human. They're human beings, despite the appearance you might have seen in the get millions of people to frantically wave flags and jump up and down, with, you know, grinning for the show, all in perfect unison. There may be some in there who find in this a great delight, but many of them do it because that's the only thing you can do.
Right. They're being obliged to. Claudia Rosette, thank you again for joining us, for being there, for your courage. Stay safe. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. Next up, we'll speak with Gordon Chang for another perspective on what's happening there and what it means for all of us right after this.
More with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and it's, as always, a delight to say we are joined by Gordon Chang, one of our country's preeminent experts on matters involving China and Asia more generally, most especially. He is a man of many parts, but that is his area of particular expertise, and we're honored to have a chance each week to visit with him about his portfolio. He's the author of three terrific books, The Coming Collapse of China, Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and Losing South Korea. Particularly topical, as that's where we find him at the moment. Gordon, it is very good to have you with us. Thank you for taking a few minutes on what I've got to believe is an unbelievably busy day for you, with everyone in the world probably looking for guidance about what is happening in China, and most especially perhaps in Hong Kong. And that's where I'd like to pick up. But first, welcome. It's good to have you back.
Well, thank you so much, Frank.
We were talking briefly with Claudia Rosette, getting sort of a firsthand account from her as to what she's seeing on the ground in Hong Kong at the moment. She's described parts of that city as war zones. You're obviously at some remove from it, but does that sound right to you? And give us your sense, Gordon, of the fact that the degree of oppression by the Chinese Communist Party's police force in Hong Kong and presumably other units that they're beginning to bring to bear there is inexorably ratcheting up, and what you expect to come next?
The reports from Hong Kong, which are becoming coming out fast in the last several hours, do indicate a war zone. And it's also not confined to any one portion of the territory. It is all over, where you have would have basically scattered firefights between young protesters clad in black and the Hong Kong policemen.
Now, when you say firefights, do you mean that there are actual live fire rounds being exchanged by both sides at this point?
Not exchanged, Frank, but there are the reports of the teenager who was shot in the chest by a Hong Kong police officer, who is now described to be in critical condition. But there is fighting between the protesters and the Hong Kong policemen, which is what led up to the firing of that round. We have seen over the course of months now excessive force used by the Hong Kong police, and that has led to moves for retribution and revenge by the protesters. And so there has really been a breakdown in discipline on both sides. And, you know, what is particularly poignant is the videos of police officers beating females who were not protesters, but beating them while they lay prostrate on the ground, their faces up forward, policemen hitting them with truncheons. This is just emblematic of what's occurred over the last several months. And that's why you have not heard criticisms of the rough tactics of the young protesters from the mass of Hong Kong people. Of course, they're being criticized by the pro-Beijing thugs and whatever and the Hong Kong government. But this really is an indication that most of society, two-thirds, three-quarters of society, are firmly opposed to the Hong Kong police.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think of reports that there are perhaps as many as twice the number of these Chinese police that are now, or PLA forces for that matter, People's Armed Police at best and People's Liberation Army forces at now stationed in Hong Kong, Gordon Chang?
Well, there have been videos which show graphically that many Hong Kong police officers are either People's Armed Police or People's Liberation Army officers. In a Cantonese-speaking city, you have police officers who can't speak Cantonese, who can't show their Hong Kong police identification cards. And in one video, there is a Hong Kong policeman in riot gear who is clearly from Hong Kong because he is speaking colloquial Cantonese. But then he turns around to other people, other Hong Kong policemen, and he speaks to them in Mandarin, and he also addresses them as comrade. And that is a clear indication that China has mixed in its forces into the Hong Kong police force.
This is an ominous sign, as obviously is the live fire shooting today. Gordon, just a quick status check as you see it. Is it your expectation now that once the so-called celebrations in Beijing, about which I want to talk with you next, are behind Xi Jinping, that he will start really going for it in Hong Kong with violent means as well as other coercive techniques?
That is possible, maybe even likely. The one thing that, you know, and I could certainly be wrong on this, but the one thing I do not expect is I don't expect a formal introduction of PLA or PAP units into Hong Kong. And this is something that we've talked about in the past. Hong Kong is not Beijing. Beijing is wide open areas. In 1989, it was unrestricted killing by the People's People's Liberation Army. Armor was able to move mostly unopposed through the western approaches of Beijing as they moved into Tiananmen Square. Hong Kong is a very dense urban landscape. It's got narrow streets, alleys. It's got tall apartment buildings. Each apartment building is a fort. The protesters who have shown that they are willing to die, and that what we've seen recently, these protesters can easily cause high casualties by going into these apartment buildings and throwing down Molotov cocktails or explosives onto Chinese units. I think the Chinese understand that. I think the Chinese are deterred. And so I don't expect a formal introduction of Chinese police or military units. But clearly the situation is going beyond control. As Michael Yon, who's an American war correspondent who's been in Hong Kong, witnessed something like 60 demonstrations by now, he was predicting that there would be a killing of a protester. And he also predicted that the protesters in response would start killing Hong Kong police officers. So this is a very dangerous and volatile situation.
Our prayers are with the people of Hong Kong, and I think our country needs to be standing with them, especially at this moment, Gordon, as we talked about with Claudia. I know you feel that way, too. Let me turn to Beijing. The preeminent feature of the so-called celebration was a massive military parade in Tiananmen Square. I was struck by reports, Gordon, that most of the people in Beijing weren't allowed to witness or otherwise observe those proceedings because of essentially a crackdown in the city of Beijing, I should say a lockdown in the city of Beijing. What's your reading on what that suggests is the attitude of the government of China towards its own people? And then tell us a little bit about your takeaway from the parade itself.
We have seen at the 50th anniversary military parade the same sort of lockdown techniques. And that parade was meant to be viewed by the Chinese people on television only. And they were prevented from seeing it live. And that was what occurred today. Of course, it shows insecurity on the part of the regime. Also, it's just obsessiveness in terms of security. This is a real indication that the people's representatives, as they call themselves, don't have the support of people. You know, they're tolerated. We don't know what the attitude of Chinese people would be if they weren't subject to such coercion. Now, with regard to the parade itself today, people have been talking about the hardware especially the Dongfeng 41 intercontinental ballistic missile. That was shown in public for the first time, though, of course, we've known it. It can reach any part of the U.S. Homeland. There's also the DF-17, which is a hypersonic glide missile. That was also shown for the first time. And in that particular category of weapon, the Chinese are far ahead of the United States, even though we're the ones who developed the theoretical concepts that made those weapons possible. So, you know, China's clearly ahead of us. We've got a long way to go in certain critical technologies. We don't have defenses for a DF-17, and therefore we do need a lot of work in missile defense.
Well, one of the key pieces of this is, Gordon, I don't think it was just the inspiration for these weapons. I believe we actually provided technology for hypersonic weapons through a program known as Skolkovo, in which Hillary Clinton facilitated that kind of technology being transferred to Russia, which I think in turn has probably made it available to the Chinese as well. Anyway, very, very worrying things. But just to drill down on this point about the Chinese government's evident fear of its own people and the possibility that any of them might act out in the course of this celebration of the establishment of one of the world's most horrific totalitarian systems, really a dark day in the history of mankind, it seems to me, that is being commemorated by the Chinese now. Do you think that there would have been, in the absence of this kind of lockdown, evident resistance to the regime or other demonstrations that would have rained on its parade, shall we say?
That's a great question, Frank. And if there were no coercion at all, I don't think the Communist Party would survive. You know, of course, the Chinese people right now are intimidated because they don't have the hope that you generally need in order to have a strong resistance movement. In other words, China is not Hong Kong. But, you know, last year, Frank, there were protests across China on a scope of issues, from investors losing money to mothers concerned about impure vaccines to army veterans who were not getting benefits. So there is great unhappiness in Chinese society. We saw that last year. It bubbles up every once in a while. So we can assume that in the absence of coercion, the Communist Party would not be able to sustain itself.
Yeah. Well, speaking of investors, we're going to talk about investments that we are making that are helping enable China's totalitarianism at home and its adventurism and aggression abroad with our next guest, Kevin Freeman. But let me say thank you, Gordon, for your time, especially on the road. Safe travels in Seoul, and keep an eye out for those who are losing South Korea, and report back when you get home. All the best, my friend. Thank you for your time today. Again, next up, Kevin Freeman joins us about economic warfare by China against us and what we best be doing about it right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by Kevin Freeman, one of our duty experts on matters involving economic warfare. He is a senior fellow specializing in those topics at the Center for Security Policy. He's also the star of his own television program on Blaze TV, Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. Kevin happens also to be the author of two terrific and best-selling books, Secret Weapon and Game Plan. And you can find out more about all of this at globaleconomicwarfare.com, Kevin's terrific blog. It's great to have you back with us. Thank you, sir, for joining us on this 70th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to be here. Not much to celebrate.
Yeah, not much to celebrate indeed. We've had a terrific series of conversations with Bradley Thayer talking a bit about sort of what that 70 years has been like for the people of China and the degree to which we have actually helped prop up and enable Chinese totalitarian control of that country. We had Claudia Rosette talking about Hong Kong and what's playing out in real time in terms of the intensifying repression there by the Chinese government. We had Gordon Chang joining us to talk a bit about what's happening, not just in Hong Kong, but elsewhere in the country as well, in particular the ferment that we see evidence of against this regime. But I wanted to talk with you, Kevin, about the subject that you have done such important pioneering work on, namely what China has been doing, if not over the entirety of its 70 years, and I think you could make the argument that's so, but certainly in the past three or four decades, through the cynical exploitation of the so-called engagement practices of successive U.S. governments and others in the West, to really wage what they've called unrestricted warfare against us. Remind us where that term comes from, Kevin, and what it's meant in practice to this, the blight of the past decades of communist misrule in China.
Well, Frank, the term comes from a book published by two senior colonels of the People's Liberation Army in 1999, roughly translated the title as Unrestricted Warfare. Actually, a better translation would be Total Warfare. But we think of it in terms of irregular warfare because the book is filled with means of conducting warfare without using traditional Army, Navy, missiles, Air Force, and so forth.
And now it's important to remember that back in 1999, when it was written, they didn't have a whole lot of that with which to wage this kind of more conventional warfare, right?
That's correct. They did not. And they stood in awe with our conventional warfare capabilities. And they said, we'll have to go a different approach. And their approach is so comprehensive. I got the book sitting here on my lap. You know, I just flipped open just to a random page, page 164 in this particular translation. It says, can special funds be set up to exert greater influence on another country's government and legislature through lobbying? Well, the Chinese have done that. Could buying and gaining control of stocks to be used to turn another country's newspapers and television stations into the tools of media warfare? Well, they've certainly exerted influence that direction. You flip any page and you'll find something that's happened in the past couple of decades that the Chinese are behind or doing.
Yeah. And you, as you say, this is asymmetric warfare. They have been waging it relentlessly against us. It's part of essentially the larger story here, isn't it? The Chinese have been at war with us, and we haven't even recognized it, let alone been fighting back, at least until Donald Trump came to office, I would argue.
Well, there's no question that they've been waging war. It's been a stealth war. It's one we've actually funded and cooperated with through most of the past couple of decades. But it is finally being recognized on a bipartisan way in some cases. China is not our friend, and China has been undermining us at every turn and then manipulating us to fund, support, and defend their Communist Party.
Let's turn to a specific case in point, Kevin Freeman, because you are a chartered financial analyst. You have long experience in the business of financial management and advice. You have been warning, as have others on our team at the Committee on the Present Danger, China, notably our friends Roger Robinson, Kyle Bass, and Chris Iacovella, who has joined us in our most recent threat briefing from the American Securities Association, about this practice of a Morgan Stanley index known as the MSCI All Country World Index as a vehicle for pouring immense amounts of money from Western capital markets, specifically the U.S. capital market, into some very unsavory, arguably very dangerous Chinese companies. What's up with that?
Well, it's interesting you mention that because Morgan Stanley, I just flipped through their reference specifically in this edition on page 160, Morgan Stanley, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, regarding credit ratings and other things. Here's a quote. It says, the goal should be to use all means whatsoever, means that involve the force of arms and means that do not involve the force of arms, means that involve military power and means that do not involve military power, means that entail casualties and means that do not entail casualties, to force the enemy to serve one's own interests. They are forcing us to serve their interests. through a series of unfortunate events, but I can assure you they're calculated and planned. Step number one is to get the global market indices, like the MSCI, Morgan Stanley Capital International Index, to increase the weighting of Chinese shares in the index. Because, of course, China is the fastest growing economy, and of course, their companies are doing great things and are innovating and all of these. Never mind that they stole all of this technology through intellectual property theft and so forth. We've got to put our money in these index. And we know that because Alibaba, the largest initial public offering in history, larger than Uber or Facebook or Google or Microsoft or Amazon or any of them, was a Chinese company where you get nothing when you invest in it. So they pulled the wool over the great market indexers and said, you got to put a huge percentage and the weighting is going to increase quadruple in this next year. That's step one. Step two, they got to convince the American investors that they ought to just put their money in the index fund and not look for individual investments and companies. And in particular, they're looking for the thrift savings plan of the United States, which is an enormous pool of money, larger than CalPERS or anyone else. It is the hard-earned pension money of American servicemen and government employees and retirees and veterans. And we're going to allocate a huge percentage increase to this international index, which, by the way, will just flow through money, which will fund Chinese companies that are doing terrible things, including spying on their own people, including spying on other people, including building weapons of warfare that could be used against the very soldiers that are funding it. It's just tragic.
Unbelievable. So, Kevin, where does this thrift savings plan raid stand at the moment? It's hard to believe that the people whose money is being invested, whether it's the Secretary of Defense or the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or the combatant commanders or, for that matter, anybody in the chain of command, would countenance having their own pension funds used for such purposes. And yet, is this going to go down? Is this actually going to happen?
Well, it's my understanding, and I used to be in this business, and I used to stand with the investment manager as we went in and talked to the pension fund. There's a consultant involved, and the consultant is my understanding, going to present this month in just about 3 weeks.
October 21st, I think.
October 21st, the notion that they need to increase the weighting into the MSCI International Global Index, not international, but the Global Index, and that recommendation will most likely be accepted by the board that oversees the thrift savings plan, and it will just be automatic without anybody raising a fuss. Frank, you and the Committee on the Present Danger of China and our friends Roger Robinson and Kyle Bass and others are screaming, don't do this. Bridge out. Stop driving down this road. You will end in a fiery crash if you do this. But we only have a few weeks to get this word out. And the average serviceman serving this country, the man or woman who is in the military defending with their life our freedom, doesn't know that they will be funding our nation's potential demise. And we've got to get this word out.
This was the real kicker, was they're not going to have a choice. If they want to be in this fund and have a diversified portfolio of international stocks, they will be obliged to have as much as, I think, 20% of those stocks investing in Chinese corporations tied to the Chinese Communist Party. Thank you for joining us, Kevin. Come back to us soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.